It's 7:41 and time for your KDNK local newscast for this Monday morning, January 30th. I'm Gavin Dahl, live from the heart of Carbondale's Creative District. Utah Congressman Jason Chaffetz reintroduced a bill last week that proposed to sell off 3.3 million acres of BLM lands identified as suitable for disposal across 10 western states. Close to 94,000 of those BLM acres are in Colorado, and almost 133,000 acres are in Utah. BLM's Colorado River Field Office spokesperson David Boyd told KDNK that lands identified as suitable for disposal are usually in small, isolated parcels and can also be used for land exchanges. Chaffetz introduced another bill that calls for eliminating hundreds of law enforcement positions at BLM and the U.S. Forest Service. These bills follow congressional devaluation of public lands earlier this month. We have an interview scheduled Wednesday with Congressman Scott Tipton. We hope to ask him about these and other issues. Grand Valley Citizens Alliance is pleased by the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment's position on URSA Resources' plans to put an injection well in Battlement Mesa along the Colorado River. URSA applied for a change in Battlement Mesa's founding PUD document earlier this month to allow for oil and gas wastewater injection wells within the community. But according to the blog From the Sticks, the CDPHE states that the risk of an injection well so close to the public water supply will persist as additional well sites are developed in the area. Health department officials said in a statement that Class 2 injection wells should not be located in urban mitigation areas and recommended that the State Oil and Gas Conservation Board deny the permit for the well and associated storage tanks on the URSA B well pad. The Garfield County Planning Commission meets to discuss the permit next Wednesday, February 8th at 6 p.m. in Glenwood Springs. KDNK will follow the story. It's still unclear how the Trump administration's freezing of grants and awards from the Environmental Protection Agency will impact programs in Colorado. Benter Berkland discusses the issue with State House reporters as part of the Rocky Mountain Community Radio Network's Capital Conversation Series.
I'm here with Luke Perkins, a reporter for the Durango Herald, and Peter Marcus with ColoradoPolitics.com. Peter, you reported that the White House recently gave the state assurances and talked to members of the governor's office and other people in the state about these grants and awards, saying it's not going to have this huge impact.
Yeah, so the Trump administration said that they were going to freeze these EPA grants and contracts, and the state benefits by about $28 million annually from these. And it was coupled with the fact that the Trump administration also ordered this blackout with the EPA. It was temporary, but staff wasn't really allowed to communicate with the public, the press, and quite frankly, the governor's office and even congressional folks were having trouble getting an answer on what does this mean. There was the possibility, the governor's office was looking at the possibility of losing all of this $28 million in federal funding. The state would have been on the hook. So they were anxious, to say the least. Then recently, the Trump administration, the White House, got in touch with the governor's office, spoke with some of his top staff, assured the office that there would not be a freeze that would really impact the state. More importantly, that efforts that continue with Gold King Mine cleanup would be ongoing, that the Superfund site would not be impacted. What those assurances exactly are, we're not sure of quite yet. But I can tell you that the governor's office, Senator Cory Gardner's office, Senator Michael Bennett's office, they're feeling a bit more confident right now. So we'll just see actually how that plays out.
And these grants go to a broad spectrum of programs.
These programs are so diverse. It goes from everything from making sure our water is safe to ensuring that the oil and gas industry can get the permit for the operations they need. So yeah, I mean, the impact of these grants, it's just immense.
Luke, what are you hearing from your part of the state where we've got the Gold King Mine cleanup?
You know, there's just a whole lot of uncertainty about not knowing what's going to happen for us going forward. That goes from both the owners of businesses in the town and also, like, the members of our community council. We were already kind of thrown for a loop whenever the EPA came out earlier this month and said that they weren't going to be paying out any of these claims that had been put in by private entities for damages from the Gold King Mine spill. And now we're once again thrown for a loop because we don't know what's going to happen with the Superfund cleanup at the Bonita Peak Mining District and all of those mining sites that are there.
This just highlights an issue we're going to have throughout the session, trying to be aware of what's happening federally and how it's going to impact the state. Still so much uncertainty on this, as well as healthcare, transportation. Regarding the EPA freeze, when I interviewed lawmakers, as you can imagine, different political parties, much different perspectives on whether this timeout is a good thing. It sounds like from the congressional delegation, there was more unification.
Yeah, when it comes to things like safe drinking water, that's not a partisan issue. You know, these are important, critical health and environmental issues. I think that Republicans, you know, would agree that it's important to review all of these grants and contracts. I mean, if the administration, if the federal government's going to be signing the checks, they want to make sure that as a new administration that they know what they're paying for. But yeah, I mean, when it came to especially making sure that Gold King Mine had the funding it needs to clean up what was a catastrophe for the region thanks to the EPA's error, that wasn't a partisan issue. Both sides, you know, Republicans, Democrats from the Colorado congressional delegation came together and said, what does this mean?
Thanks. That was Peter Marcus, a reporter for ColoradoPolitics.com, and Luke Perkins with the Durango Herald. I'm Benta Berkland in Denver, and this is Capital Conversation.
Oral health falls under Governor John Hickenlooper's top 10 winnable battles for health in Colorado. Consuming fluoride in water is one way to help combat poor oral health, according to public health experts. For Connecting the Drops, Holly Pretzky from KRCC in Colorado Springs explores the presence of fluoride in our drinking water.
At the Pioneers Museum in downtown Colorado Springs, director Matt Mayberry gets ready for a new exhibit.
So these are slides that are maybe 4 by 5 inches, and they are, in this case, a slide of, I'm guessing, a child's mouth. Literally, you can see the fingers that are holding the lips.
He's looking at slides that belong to Springs dentist Frederick McKay in the early 1900s.
As he was working on children in Colorado Springs, he would notice that many of our Colorado Springs kids had brown stained teeth. It went on to become known as the Colorado brown stain.
McKay was the first to discover that the staining came from fluoride his patients were getting in their drinking water through Pikes Peak granite.
Fluoride's a naturally occurring mineral.
Dr. Jeff Call is a pediatric dentist and an executive committee member of the Colorado Dental Association.
Tooth structure that has fluoride incorporated into it as part of that chemical reaction is actually more resistant to the acids from bacteria. And so it makes the teeth harder, stronger.
And it doesn't always discolor teeth, not if it's at the proper concentration. According to the American Dental Association, the optimal level of fluoride to help protect teeth without causing those brown stains is 0.7 parts per million. Katya Moritzen works in the Oral Health Division of the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment, which encourages communities to make sure there's enough fluoride in the drinking water.
Water fluoridation has always been shown to be very cost effective. And it was chosen by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention as one of the top 10 public health interventions of the 20th century.
Many water systems, including those in Denver, Fort Collins, and Pueblo, add fluoride to their drinking water to meet optimal levels. Because Pikes Peak granite naturally has a lot of fluoride, Colorado Springs Utilities sometimes dilutes its water with water from other sources. At Fountain Creek in Colorado Springs, Corey Teal submerges several bottles beneath the surface of the water. Teal is an environmental technician at Colorado Springs Utilities.
Is it cold?
It is.
Teal is demonstrating how he gathers samples from water sources to do physical, chemical, and microbiological analysis at the lab.
We check for fluoride depending on the source, generally every week.
Due to that fluoride-rich Pikes Peak granite, Teal expects results to typically show Colorado Springs water at well above the optimal level. However, nowadays, the majority of the city's residents, those living in the north and northeast parts of the city, get water with levels far below that. Rick Johnson supervises water analysis at Colorado Springs Utilities. He says the water serving those areas actually doesn't come from the Pikes Peak region.
Colorado Springs having high fluoride concentration in one area and lower fluoride concentration in another part of the city is due to the fact that we bring in different sources of water.
So Johnson says, well, about 20% of residents of the city are drinking local water. The other 80% are drinking Trans Mountain water from across the state. Some are getting lots of fluoride, but most are barely getting any, and the city doesn't add fluoride. Katya Morrison with the state's health department says Colorado currently ranks 27th in the nation as to the percentage of residents with access to optimally fluoridated water. As for the 10 winnable battles, the goal is to have almost 80% of water systems in the state fluoridated by 2020. Morrison says they're on track to meet that goal. For Connecting the Drops and with reporter Dana Cronin, I'm Holly Pretzky.
Connecting the Drops is a collaboration between Rocky Mountain Community Radio Stations and the Colorado Foundation for Water Education. Find out more at yourwatercolorado.org. Support for this piece is provided by CoBank.
New numbers show efforts to fast-track the repeal of Obamacare before a replacement plan is put in place could have a big impact on Colorado's kids and working families. Eric Galatis has more.
Aaron Miller with the Colorado Children's Campaign says new data from the Urban Institute shows nearly 600,000 Colorado residents could lose coverage, including more than 100,000 children.
It's irresponsible to throw the healthcare system into chaos by repealing the Affordable Care Act until a thoughtful and well-considered replacement plan is ready to go that helps protect especially Colorado kids, but Coloradans in general.
The Institute's projections are based on legislation to repeal the ACA passed by Congress a year ago but vetoed by President Obama and show Colorado's total uninsured rate would more than double, rising from 9% to 22%. Trump's executive order enables agencies to not enforce parts of Obamacare that impose financial burdens, such as the mandate for individuals to buy coverage, and also allows insurers to sell policies across state lines. Miller says some 150,000 Colorado parents would lose coverage if Obamacare is dismantled, putting additional economic stress on families. The report found the total number of kids without insurance in the state would increase to more than 160,000.
The vast majority of these kids who would lose coverage would be from working families, and the largest share would actually be from sort of middle and upper income families. And parents losing coverage is also bad for kids. It impacts kids' access to health coverage and access to health services.
This is Eric Galatis reporting for KDNK.
Meanwhile, a bill that would repeal the state's health care exchange gets its first committee hearing on Tuesday at the Capitol. The Republican sponsor says it would save the state money to switch to the federal health exchange. Benta Berkland reports.
The exchanges are how people purchase health insurance under the Affordable Care Act. Freshman lawmaker Republican Senator Jim Smallwood from Parker says his measure is not an indictment of Obamacare. Smallwood says he even likes some parts of that law. He says instead he was driven by the high cost of the state's exchange and its inability to stay afloat financially without tax credits and grants. He also worries about the lack of choices after several insurance companies dropped some or all of their plans from the exchange.
Continuing marching forward blindly like we are today with fewer and fewer insurance companies, smaller plans, skyrocketing premiums, and additional fees placed on our citizens to not put on the table a different alternative, to me, in my role, seems irresponsible.
Smallwood says he's not confident that the federal exchange would be better, but he thinks it would be cheaper and certainly not worse. Democratic Senator Irene Aguilar from Denver says it's a discussion worth having. She's the only physician in the legislature and also has concerns about the state exchange's finances, but she doesn't think the timing is right.
Sadly, in light of what's happening at the federal level with the orders that have been signed saying don't enforce costs for people and things, there's already going to be so much chaos in the insurance market that this is just going to build on the chaos that the federal government is creating.
The proposal will certainly get a robust debate in the Senate, and while some Democrats like Aguilar wouldn't be opposed to it happening in the future, it won't go far in the Democratic-controlled House this session. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
A reminder that you can talk back to KDNK. Call 963-0139 and select extension 8 to leave us a message or email news at kdnk.org.